International Broadcasting lives on 5085. The Big One, WTWW.
Please stand by as we get ready to launch another episode of this Reality Radio Cafe Cast with your host and my husband, Denny J, K5DCC.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Ignition, lift off.
Now grab your glass and get ready to fill it up with some radio on the rocks.
Vehicle's pitching downrange.
Denny J here in the Digicom Cafe. Welcome. Pull up a chair. Grab yourself a cup of coffee. This is Monday, April 12th, 2021. And I'm just sitting around the table here enjoying my cup of coffee, waiting for folks to start dropping in. Particularly our friend Professor Jim Brown, W0RLD, should be showing up here any moment. We'll have an interesting conversation to start our day. And here he is, Professor Jim. Good morning.
You were probably worried, weren't you?
Not a bit. Last time you dropped in right on the minute. What are the times earlier?
Well, I had to reboot my computer. I wasn't getting any sound out of the microphone. And then I discovered a button on the back side of one of my new headphone pads that is a microphone mute switch. And that button has to be pressed in. So figured that out.
So there's nothing wrong with your computer?
Oh, no, I think there is.
Oh, okay. So do you have to bring it back in person, or?
No, they send a box. I should get the box today.
Okay. Well, speaking of which, I'm looking forward to getting a box this week, too, on Wednesday. My D74 has finally been repaired after nearly 2 months. So they got it all QC'd, and it's coming back.
So what was wrong with it? Why did you send it in?
Well, it was almost a year since I had purchased it. I was a couple of weeks out from my warranty period. And it seemed like it got COVID about the same time I did. I mean, it was just misbehaving. It was doing all kinds of weird stuff. I couldn't get it to work at all by the time I sent it back in. It just progressively got worse and worse, almost like it got a virus. So they replaced multiple boards in the thing. And the last board that was on their list there on the website, they didn't have, so they had to order that. And I have a feeling it was on a slow boat from Japan stuck in the Suez.
Yes.
Oh. Well, did you have any luck yesterday getting on Ham Shack Hotline? Did you get that new phone provisioned yet?
No. And I figured out lots of stuff. I reactivated an old Wi-Fi extender because now I need two jacks in the basement. got all that working. And so the next problem was the first time I tried to provision the phone, the IP phone, it asked for a login and password. And of course, the document that is provided and all the instructions online simply say you put your local Wi-Fi IP in a string they give you, string of commands, and put it in a browser. And it's just supposed to download everything and make your phone reboot, and then you're good to go. But the login and password confused me. So I messed around a while on that and found out it was the login and password to the phone itself. And I tried to get in. If you put in the IP address in a browser, it will go right to the phone and disclose the innards of the phone, so to speak.
Right, right.
And that's in an admin menu, and I couldn't get into the admin menu. So then I explored the menu system a while, and oh, by the way, there was somebody else's name in there and the call history of that person and all kinds of stuff that was in there. So
yeah, that's the problem with buying one of those used phones is the party that's selling it probably didn't provide you with that info, did they?
No. In fact, if I'd read more carefully, it's the folks at the what is it I'm trying to connect to?
Ham Shack Hotline.
The folks there, if you read carefully, they'll say before you buy anything on eBay, be sure that it's unlocked and you can get into the admin menu. Well, fortunately, I found a menu item in the phone for a system reset to just put the phone back to the way it came out of the factory. I did that, and sure enough, now I have access to the admin menu. Oh. So now I assume it is unlocked.
Good.
But the phone is capable of locking the admin menu such that even if you do a system reset, you still can't get into the admin menu. So I guess I was lucky.
Yeah. Well, you could have always emailed the party you got it from and gotten the info, I would imagine.
Oh, I'm sure off of eBay, it's just somebody's collecting these things and forwarding them on.
Well, of course, they're not doing anybody a service by doing that. And if they weren't going to cover it, you would send it back in probably and get your money back.
Mm-hmm.
Or they would have a very poor rating.
It did not come with a desk stand. I notice yours is propped up at an angle.
Yeah.
And mine doesn't have the gizmo in back that allows it to sit on the desk at an angle. So I'll have to design and 3D print one.
There you go. Oh, fine. Well, let me know when you get that thing provisioned. Give me a call on my line, which you can look up in the phone book there on Ham Shack Hotline.
Yeah, I'll look it up. The one error message I'm getting now is that when the profile is not being used, it will reboot the phone. So that implies that maybe one of my first attempts at provisioning locked up something at Ham Shack Hotline. And maybe they have to reset something on their end before I can do this. Anyway, I have all this that I've just talked about is in multiple sequential messages in one tech request. And so at some point, of course, these people are all volunteers. And so you just have to be patient.
Yep. Good crew over there. Jesse, WH6AV, is one of the workers. And he is committed and dedicated to whatever he does. He's an excellent ham and really helps the community in many ways. And Dave and several others there. One of the guys volunteers to handle the map side so you can see all the people and where they live and things around the world. That's a pretty cool group. And, of course, they it costs them to run these servers, so it's always encouraged if you have a few extra bucks, send them their way to help them out.
I will do that, assuming that I can actually get this to work.
Right. Well, I'm sure you will. And it's probably nothing that'll get used heavily, but, you know, as much as you and I talk, it's a good way to reach each other if we want to, if we're not, you know, on the voice chat or something. Speaking of being in the voice chat, my friend Dale just showed up this morning.
Good morning, Dale.
Good morning, boys. Just passed your road, turning off Denny off 65 here, going to Branson.
All right. I think I heard Terry coughing a little bit in the background. Good morning, guys.
Good morning, everyone.
And there she is, the president of the Northwest Arkansas Amateur Radio Club, who you can hear live every Monday night at 7:30 p.m. here on 444.800. Anyway, she's very professional sounding. She's also at Extra Class along with Dale, and they got their new call signs. We're wondering what you're going to do, Jim. I'll bet you anything you're going to keep the one you got, aren't you?
I sure am. W0RLD, top of the world.
Very good. Well, this is fun seeing everybody upgrading, and now the stress is over. You can start digging in and enjoying the hobby. And I think probably this week you'd be putting in your order for that 7300, won't you?
Soon. It's not. There's no real hurry about it. I don't have an antenna up yet, and I don't want to have a radio sitting around without an antenna.
That might be good motivation.
And of course, I study things infinitely before I pull the trigger on something. And I'm doing a lot of reading about antennas. I already have an antenna, so I'm thinking about something for 2 meters outside. And I heard an interesting presentation at our local ham club the other night on slot antennas. Have you ever read about those?
No.
Oh, it's weird. It's really weird. It's open holes. I mean, you can take a flat piece of metal and cut a hole out of it and feed it on either side of the hole, and it's an antenna.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Weird. I'll have to look that up. Are you documenting all the stuff that you're getting into so you can lead us down these rabbit holes?
Not really. I'm very poor at documentation. Unless I have some end goal that I have to prepare for a talk or whatever. But it was fascinating because actually it's not the hole that broadcasts the signal. It's the perimeter of the hole. But it's the opposite of it. It's sort of the electrical opposite of a dipole, and you can fold the slot in any, so a slot antenna for higher frequencies could be fairly long, but you can use aluminum tape on a window, for example. Let's say you have a patio, a glass patio door, let's say. You could stick aluminum tape to the door and the open parts of the tape where you can see through the glass would be folded up and down. It's like it reminds me of a maze you might train a rat in, you know, with the channels running up and then turning and running down and then turning and running up and so forth. And you can feed this thing, and it's has fairly high gain. Its gain is over a dipole. The talk I heard, the gain approaches 5 dB. And here's the weird thing about it. You can make a vertical slot antenna that's horizontally polarized. Figure that one out.
Huh. I'm just doing a quick search on the browser here for it. It looks like a lot of interesting websites. Hey, we'll have to get into that. You know, too bad you're so far away. You could come join us for our antenna building party, which, by the way, we need to get that scheduled up probably in another week or so. But we're going to be working on building those VHF tape measure Yagis.
Yeah, I'd like to have a copy of your plans, because are you going to use those for satellite, or what are you going to use them for?
Well, they could use them for satellite on the ISS, because APRS is on the same frequency up and down, which is another reason I'm anxious to get my D74 back again so I can get back into that. I really enjoy the APRS. But probably the main thing we'll use it for upcoming is a fox hunt we're going to have next month. And so we've got a couple of them built already. I think, Bob, good morning, Bob. You went and built yours on your own, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
Morning. Nice to hear y'all talking again today. Yeah, I built one. Go
ahead. I've got a new tool to test out your antenna when you bring it over. Jim and I both have them now and getting used to them, and Jim will be testing his out when he gets his antenna up. But we'll find out what your antenna is doing, what the SWR is. Anyway, we'll pick a weekend coming up here soon. Hopefully we'll have another beautiful day like we had yesterday. Oh my, what a beautiful day.
What kind of dogs do you use on that fox hunt?
Yeah, right. You've never been on a fox hunt either then, huh?
Oh, I know what they are, but I've never actually done one. I think it would be fun. So
yeah.
Here's my naive view of what happens. Somebody goes out in the woods somewhere and sets up a station and broadcast, and other people try to find it. Is that right?
That's basically it. And it's nothing fancy. In fact, we've got a couple of guys in the club that are going to operate the Fox station. It's just a little tiny thing with very low power, and it's all automated. It transmits for a minute once every 5 minutes. And so we're all out and about the county, and we're using our new antennas, pointing in the general direction until we hear a signal. And then we have to plot that on a map. And then we move around to another part of the county and do it again, plot it on a map. Using triangulation methods, we get the general location of it. So everybody migrates to the general location. And then we start using different techniques, like holding up your little HT without an antenna right to your chest, and you turn your body. So your body is kind of blocking one direction. And so where you see the null, you know it's 180 degrees the other direction, or in that direction. So then you just meander around wherever it is you're at until you locate it. And everybody's gathered there, so we'll have a little picnic at the same time. So you might have to have a really strong, powerful multi-element antenna to be able to pick us up from Indianapolis.
you're reminding me of a compass course we laid out for scouts on a camping trip in one of the scout camps in our council. This particular scout camp had a big water tower, and we laid out a compass course in which the water tower was one of the destination points along the course. And then, of course, you were supposed to take a bearing from the water tower out to the next point, and go find the next point. And it takes a really sharp scout to figure out you can't actually take the bearing that you need from the actual water tower, because the water tower itself will throw the compass off 15 or 20 degrees or more.
Yeah.
So what you have to do is go well away from the water tower and take a back bearing to the water tower, and then turn around and take the bearing from the other direction from the water tower. And that's the only way you can do this accurately. And it takes a sharp scout to figure that out.
Yep. Our oldest son is really big in orienteering, they call it. And they have these races where everybody starts out and they have a general map, and all they have is a compass to go with that. No smartphones, just a compass. And they have several waypoints along the way that they have to get a stamp from, or stamp the card, or whatever it is they do. And they go about this race and see who can finish first. And so he's gotten his kids involved in it. It's a real fun activity.
Oh, it is. It's really fun. And the problem is that, well, in Northwest Arkansas, you would have to, working with maps and a compass, you would have to make a correction for declination. Unfortunately, in Indiana, it's hard to teach that, because if you look at the zero declination line, in other words, no correction, it runs right down through Indiana. So you could just use the compass without correcting for declination.
Yeah. Well, speaking of camping, here's our camping buddy showed up here this morning. Good morning, Daniel. Are you happy to be sleeping on a regular mattress again?
Bonjour from Zulu Sierra 5 Delta Golf in Durban, South Africa. It is so nice to sleep in my own bed last night. The bed doesn't move. It doesn't deflate. I really enjoyed it.
I think of two people on an air mattress, kind of like that TV show where they've got people sitting in the middle of the water on the edge of one of these big airbag things and someone jumps from up above or they drop a heavy weight and it offsets and whoop, up in the air they go. Is that kind of like what it's like sleeping, the two of you on that air mattress? Does she send you flying out of the bed or vice versa?
Especially when Dot's joining me, because as you know, she's rather, how can I put it, on the large side. the first two nights, she had her own stretcher because I bought her for her birthday. It's a nice military type one. It's quite sturdy. And she slept on that, and I slept on my inflatable mattress. So there was no interference there. She slept like a babe.
Yeah. Well, I like your comment when you were telling us about it, how you had a sinking feeling, if you know what I mean. your air mattress is leaking?
Yes, during the middle of the night, suddenly I just had a sinking thing, and then I hit rock bottom to pump up the mattress.
Oh, that's funny. Very good. Well, Dale, did you do any more with Droid Star? Have you got that figured out? Hello, Dale. There you go.
He said to tell you no, he didn't. Oh, I dropped the phone a while ago when you asked me about the antenna party.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll make an announcement here pretty soon about that antenna party. I think maybe this coming Saturday we'll do it if the weather's going to be nice.
Yeah.
We'll let you all know. And tonight's the net.
Yes, it is.
And you're still here. I thought you guys might be... No, this isn't the weekend you're going to travel, was it?
No, and that's been canceled.
Okay. Well, we'll be there tonight. I'll have to think of a what-if question. Maybe I'll use Jim's for the day. By the way, Jim, what is the what-if question? You got it all figured out today?
Yeah, this is a serious one, actually. And it involves... the reason I picked this one, because South Africa comes into the picture, which I will eventually bring in to the story if I remember it. But I picked this especially to get Daniel's reaction. So in the U.S. in the news, there are unfortunately examples of where... at the moment, it's Asian people who are being attacked by people that are, I would assume, not mentally all there. But because of the coronavirus or whatever, Asian people are coming into actual attacks in which they're being beaten and people going about their business, walking down the street, and people will come up and hit them, kick them. In New York recently, a man hit and choked a subway passenger in New York into unconsciousness, and another one, an assailant, again in New York, knocks a Filipino immigrant to the ground and repeatedly kicks her head. So the question is, the what if question is, if you came across one of these scenes, what would you do as a passerby? Would you try to intervene? Or would you, there's always some element of danger in these situations. You don't know whether the person doing the attacking has a gun or a knife or is physically bigger than you. Well, you can tell if they're physically bigger than you are, but there is always an element of risk. So what would you do? And would you, as we saw in the George Floyd situation, there were many people watching and even making video of that situation in which the police had a knee on George Floyd's neck and for an extended period of time, and he died. And now those people are testifying in the court case, and they have remorse because they didn't intervene. Well, how do you intervene when it's the police? You know, that's another difficult question. But let's take the police out of the picture. If you encountered somebody attacking another person. And maybe you're the only person there, or maybe you're in a small group of onlookers. What ethically would you do? Or would you stand by, or would you try to intervene? That's the question.
And you're going to tie this in with South Africa?
I am, but I want to hear your response first.
Oh, okay. Well, I was thinking of our conversation yesterday or the day before, talking about being bullied and how today, because I was bullied as a young person, I just can't stand bullies. And it takes everything in me not to stop and intervene when I see someone being bullied. But I'm also thinking about the thought that hate and violence begets more hate and violence. And so the anger that wells up when I see that kind of thing is not really developing a good reaction either. And there comes a point in time where that has to stop, that chain has to be broken. And that's really what wars are all about. You know, someone offends somebody and that gets them upset, and so they want to fight back and get vengeance. And I think of that verse, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord." It's hard to deal with. We have our natural inclinations. And I think of some good friends of mine that are cops. They see the dark side of life every day. And it's not always helping people. It's sometimes just stopping criminals. And after a long period of time of experiencing that and being involved in, you know, physical fights to stop criminals, they get very jaded in their view of the world, and they're very angry often, and they take that home with them. They can't relate to their families anymore. They're trying to bury that and hide it. And so sometimes their reactions to a situation can be over the top just because of the anger that it builds within them when they keep dealing with these kind of people day in and day out. So, and as an outsider being involved in something like that and seeing that, of course, you know, you're risking the possibility that you will be arrested and thrown to jail for interfering with a police officer in his job. But in general life, yeah, if you're walking down the street and you see somebody getting attacked or beat up, it would take everything within me not to get involved. I would definitely want to get in there and try and stop it and protect that innocent party. But I don't know if I'd be too kind. You know, because I've already had that bullying background, and I'd want to see someone pay.
Well, that's my take on it as well. Of course, the cases in which nobody intervenes get widely publicized in the news, and it's generated in the past a whole branch of psychology dedicated to understanding the behavioral dynamics of people confronted with public violence. And in a recent study, 2019 study published in the journal American Psychologist, researchers in Britain and the Netherlands reviewed surveillance footage of 200 violent altercations in three countries, and found that bystanders had intervened 9 out of 10 times, which is much higher than I would have guessed. In many of the instances, several strangers worked together to calm a fight. And the authors found little variation in the rates of intervention in three cities: Amsterdam, Cape Town, and there's the reference to South Africa, and Lancaster, England, suggesting that the human response to help strangers, despite risks to one's own personal safety, is universal. And I did have an opportunity to intervene at one time. I was driving in Indianapolis on a side street. There was nobody else around, no other pedestrians, very few cars, and I saw a man assaulting a woman, and I stopped the car, got out, and intervened, and was able to defuse the situation verbally. Never had to never had to do anything physical. And that, I think, is the best way to intervene. Just draw attention away from whoever's doing the attack and getting them to calm down to such a point that they're not attacking anymore. And I was thankful I was able to do that. I did not have to use what skills I had, and I didn't see the need to, because the man was drunk and I was not. So really, I didn't need to do anything more than just draw attention away from what he was doing. And the woman was able to escape. So that was happily solved without raising a finger, but just opening my mouth and talking, which is the best way to do it.
Right.
Well, you know, we see some of these scenarios play out in ham radio too. I can't say that the ham radio community is 100% responsible, kind people. Often you hear some awful abusive things going out over the air, like on single sideband. There are many frequencies that are famous for that kind of behavior, and people try and stay away from it. But it's impossible to try and diffuse some of these things on some of these platforms. We have very little control. Now, the digital world is quite different. And this is one of the reasons I really like these new technologies, because we have the control to mute people, to ban people, to kick them out of a group if they're getting abusive, verbally abusive. And nowadays, with our political culture that we live in, there's a lot of hate being spewed out there and a lot of arguing and debating, that a lot of unkind things are said. And so with the digital tools that we have right here in our own group, right here in our voice chat and Telegram, if anybody starts getting verbally abusive, which I never anticipate would ever happen here, but if there were, all I have to do is click of a mouse and they're gone, or they're shut up, or so it's nice to have these controls. And you were about to say something again, Jim. I heard you take a breath.
Oh, you heard me drinking coffee.
So that's a lovely aspect of our new technology, is we do have some controls.
Indeed.
Anybody else in our group here, Daniel? Did you have any responses to that?
Yeah, if I could comment. It happened one time where I was driving, and there was, school children bullying others and beating up. What I did, I stopped the car, and I just put my hand on the horn. I just left it there, and they scattered. So I'm glad I managed to break that one. I've got a note of warning. In South Africa, you got to be extremely careful, because life is cheap here. They will not think twice before killing you, stabbing you, or shooting you, whatever. So you got to be extremely careful. So really hesitant normally, and getting involved, because they won't think twice before killing you. But God forbid that I should ever be in that situation there, Danny.
Yeah, you live in a country that's really plagued with racism and a lot of anger from past treatments and things. And now I suppose you're kind of feeling like you're in the minority. And in fact, you've told me that you have a group of guys get together regularly and use your Zello radios, I believe, to travel around your neighborhood to kind of do neighborhood watch and stuff. Is that still going on?
Yes. In fact, thanks to the modern technology on Zello, I belong to a neighborhood watch group. And I was coming across, we were driving and I going to church, and we came across people who he was trying to break into a car. And I immediately got onto the Lazetta group for the neighborhood watch. And within a short space of time, the police were there. So thank God for that technology, Danny.
Yeah, it's really a necessary part of our world, is having those communication channels. Can you imagine being all by yourself and not having a radio? And how do you get help other than, like you say, lean on a horn for a long period of time and draw attention that way? But the communication tools that we've got and the police force has got now. I mean, they're getting more and more sophisticated all the time with trunking and the digital tools that they have too. Come in very handy. And then of course it's nice if we carry a radio with us wherever we go and have access to either something like Zello, a VoIP technology, or a repeater where we can be instantly available to call for help if we see something like that happening. How about you, Bob? What do you think? What's your answer?
Yeah, I would say I hope and pray that I would have enough courage or whatever it takes to jump in a situation where see somebody innocence being picked on or something. I do remember one time I was in Hawaii. We worked in Waikiki outdoor gift shops, and the lady shopping at our store there was walking around looking at things, and probably a tourist, I guess. And some young guy came by and grabbed her purse and took off running. And just instantly, thank God, whatever was in me, you know, knew that, you know, something had to be done right then. So I took off chasing him. He climbed up over a fence, and at least he dropped the purse, and I got the purse back. I didn't get him, but yeah, I hope I jump in the situation, and maybe there'd be some others around that would jump in with us and, you know, try to do the right thing. That's what I think.
Yeah, it's important that we're prepared. Excuse me, my morning junk came up. I couldn't talk. Anyway, it's important that we are prepared and trained for those things. And I know there's a lot of debate about gun control and things. That we happen to live in a part of the country where everybody around here has guns, and many of the people that do are very well trained and will take care of themselves and intervene easily and wisely. And it's a sad state of affairs that we live in, that we have to even have those worries. But nowadays, as we've heard on the news, many gun shootings in churches, many churches now have teams of people that have been trained and know exactly what to do if someone comes in trying to shoot up the place and kill people. And I happen to be one of those that has been through some of that training. And, you know, we're just a little church out in the country, and anybody could come in there and do their nasty deed. And fortunately, they probably wouldn't get away with too much. But as scouting, I mean, Jim refers to scouting a lot. You know, what's the main motto of a scout? Be prepared.
Yes, be prepared. There's even a song. Be prepared, the motto of the Boy Scouts. Be prepared, the motto of the Scouts. Prepared, the motto of the Boy Scouts. And so on. But I've got to modify that song now, because it's now scouting. It's not Boy Scouts.
Right.
Because scouting now incorporates girls.
Yeah. And I know you're not averse to having a gun, which is different considering your perspective. You're more on a political spectrum of those that are against guns, but you're kind of an amalgamation, as you have told me.
Well, on the other hand, the First Amendment is not absolute, and I get sort of upset with Second Amendment people that are absolutist, and there are restrictions on the First Amendment, and I don't see anything wrong with reasonable background checks. And, you know, I think those of us who act responsibly with guns don't really mind. You know, why should it be easier to get a gun that kills people than it is to get a driver's license? That's always puzzled me.
Right.
Yeah, there ought to be some training, you know, at least, that like there is for driver's training.
Sure. Yeah, I'm with you on that for sure. We need more training that makes us responsible. And we've been through several courses, and some of the stories of cops who have had to shoot and kill someone and the emotional results of that in their lives, very sobering. That's the last thing we want to do, is to shoot and kill someone. But, you know, as a deterrent, it's good to have a weapon and to be trained. And as we talk about this question, the what if question, we need to ask ourselves these questions to be prepared. What if?
Yeah, to think scouting. To go through various scenarios in your mind. It's like anything else. It's practicing for what you hope never happens.
Exactly.
You know, I'm CPR trained, and I hope everybody listening is as well. If not, I encourage you to get CPR trained. That's another what if situation. What if we see somebody that is in the act of dying? You know, what are we prepared to do to help them? Right. And you know, it's getting training and thinking about untoward situations, hoping they never happen. Yeah, right. But being prepared to act appropriately if they do.
Yep. And that's the important aspect of amateur radio. This is all about originally being prepared for an emergency communications. And there are many courses you can take in MCOM that might prove valuable sometime. But if you don't use it, you lose it. You know, there's a lot of information. Kind of like taking that extra class test. If you don't use it, you're going to lose all that pretty quick.
Well, I think I've, let's see, it's now 2 days later, and I still remember something. But my guess is in a week, I probably won't know much. You know, if I didn't review what I had studied 2 weeks from now, if I took that test again, I don't think I would score as well.
Yeah, I never want to have to take it again because I wouldn't pass this time. I mean, it's been 3/4 of a year now since I passed, so I don't think I'd do it again.
On the other hand, you know, it was I look back on it now since it's over, and it was a very good thing for, you know, I could have just used my general license, bought a radio, and gotten back on the air. But when I got my license, everything was vacuum tube, you know, and now it's all a digital world. And in the study for the exam, I learned some things that I would never have learned if I just bought a radio and got back on the air. And I learned all about these vector network analyzers, for example, and how handy they are, and now how inexpensive they are. So, you know, in the course of the study, I learned about lots of things. And in talking with you, I learned about lots of things. And that's what ham radio is all about. People who know something help other people who are trying to learn that something.
Yeah. And that's a good reason to be involved in an amateur radio club. And if anyone is not involved in a club, you need to start hanging around some people that are preparedness people that think about the future, ask the what if questions, whether it be a weather situation or maybe a societal problem where society's normal control things are falling apart and you're out there in the middle of nowhere all on your own. Do you have a community that you can rely on, that you can share with if there's needs? Have you got enough food stored up that you can share with others? Not hoard it for yourselves, obviously, but you know, you need a community. And the ham radio community generally is a prepared community. They try to be. And get involved in some courses, whether it's Skywarn or some of the MCOM courses I've taken and passed a couple of those. So I could be an asset to our local county for emergency situation, earthquake, you know, tornadoes, whatever. My local immediate community relies on me for weather because sometimes the normal weather services aren't really all that up to what's happening immediately in the area. So I'm always watching radar. People call me. Do I need to be concerned? Is anything serious coming? And I keep them all apprised, and they rely on me for that. So that's a good what-if question, Jim. Appreciate it. And unfortunately, we live in a world where we have to even think about those things. But if you don't ask those what-if questions and follow through with some positive, responsible actions, you know, we're going to live in a chaotic world.
Indeed. I can't think of anything else to say.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of this Droid Star thing again. I was using my Dude Star here this morning. In fact, right now I'm logged into the M17 mode, which is a brand new mode. And there is a dashboard. I can share the link with you about that. In fact, I'm monitoring here now and looking at the list of who's in there. Let me share this link and you take a look and you'll see for yourself. Two brothers are in here, N4IRS and N4IRR. Does that ring a bell?
Let's see.
Go ahead and click on the link I just shared. This is from a fella in Norway who has his own dashboard for the M17 network. And look down that list. This shows the latest activity on all the different active M17 reflectors.
Yeah.
Do you see number 5 and 6?
Yes.
These are the brothers, Steve and Michael, who are the programmers behind the DV switch software.
Uh-huh.
So they're looking at this new mode of communication also, and I wouldn't be surprised if very soon we will see that added to the DV link server and their system. So,
okay. Now, is this something you already told me about or you have forgotten to tell me about? DV-Link? I'm not sure. Yeah. I know what DV Link is.
Yeah, I may have just glossed over it a few times, but on my RT4, which is basically an Android phone in a radio format, or in this Droid Star, Dude Star, you can download these various apps to access the different digital reflectors. Well, these brothers, the Zingman brothers, over the last couple of years have been working on developing the bridging software that goes from an all-star node, which you have, over to a digital mode, whether it be DMR or D-Star or Fusion, P25, NXDN. It's all part of their, what they call the DV switch suite of software that you install on a Linux box. And then they've got what they call DV switch mobile, which is the remote interface that you use to access those different modes. It's got your various drop downs where you pick which mode you want, which reflector or talk group you want. It's got a push to talk button. The nice thing about their software is it really works well with some of these network radios where you can use a push to talk button rather than push the button on the screen. Plus, it stays active even though the screen goes dark or you switch applications. It stays active and connected all the time. That's one of the drawbacks of the Droid Star, Dude Star, is, not Dude Star. Dude Star stays active no matter what you do. But on a phone, Droid Star will drop the connection as soon as you turn the screen off or go to a different application. So it's not reliably working in the background. So anyway, we've been big fans of the DV switch software. And then they came up with their DV Link server, which is also running on a Raspberry Pi. That's what's handling all the basic connections to these different modes. And then you connect to it with the DV switch mobile interface. And you can easily go out on any mode without a radio. So it's doing what they call the transcoding. Every platform has different codecs for how they handle audio. D-Star, of course, is proprietary. DMR is proprietary. Fusion is more ham radio centric. I don't know if that's that proprietary. Maybe it probably is. It's owned by Yaesu. But this M17 is like open source. It's open for anybody who's a programmer to get into it and help make it better, make changes to it. And Steve and Michael, N4IRS and N4IRR, they are the brothers that have been responsible for the development of the DV switch. Is using MMDVM platform to multi-mode digital voice mode of communication. And they've got all these different tools to bridge these things. Do an excellent job. And it's just interesting to see them here in this list on an M17 because they don't have that yet as part of their suite of software. So they're looking at it seriously, I think. Trying it out, seeing what the codecs are probably, and will soon, I would bet, be adding that to their DV Link server.
So I'm just looking at DV switch now on the web, trying to figure out what you're saying, which is always a problem for me.
There's not a real website. it's not like they have a website that explains it all. They do have a groups.io link, and that's usually where it goes, dvswitch.groups.io.
Yeah, that's where I am.
It's basically a board where everybody shares all the latest information, asks questions. And this is something that just blows my mind, is guys like Steve and Michael, who are so dedicated to this, and they have jobs, regular jobs, but they spend hours and hours a day, I think, answering questions and helping people, you know, understand this, get involved in it. I mean, that takes a lot of commitment.
So explain to me the difference between this and Dude Star.
Well, I'm not sure I totally understand it, how Doug has done it on Dude Star, because I don't see a server involved in this. I can only assume that the server and the interface are one. That when you download this app on your PC or your Mac or on your phone, on the Android, soon to come out on the iPhone, it would seem to me that that server stuff is part of the app, because everything else is going to another server before you can get out on the highway, the digital highway. Unless Doug has got his own server that's handling all this, and we don't see the connection behind the scenes. But I don't think so. I think it's all being handled in the device itself. You know, much like your interface to your All-Star node. Your All-Star node is the server that's running on your Raspberry Pi. That is the access point to the All-Star network. Your app, like if you're using DroidStar or if you're using Zoiper, that's like your remote interface to your reflector or your server running on your Pi. And controlling that reflector, saying, okay, now I want to connect to this person out in the All-Star network. DroidStar, I don't know where it's connecting. It just, it allows you to connect directly right to any of those different digital modes and whichever reflector or talk group you want to go out on.
But the bottom line, the bottom line is DudeStar, DroidStar, and the DroidStar is just the Android connection to that world, and DudeStar is the desktop connection to that world. That essentially is performing the same function as DVSwitch, as I understand it.
Yeah, correct? It's just that they seem to me to be separate. DVSwitch Mobile, to me, it's not doing anything other than interfacing with your server, which is running on a Raspberry Pi. So the server DV Link is what is providing the transcoding to the different networks. It's all about the network. So you've got a Fusion network, DMR network, DStar network, P25. They're all networks that you have to connect to via the software running on the server. But you have to have some kind of a WYSIWYG interface to that, where you touch a place on the screen to say, okay, here's this drop down, which mode do I want, that kind of stuff. That's just the interface to it. It's not the server on your phone. But DroidStar, I don't know what they're connecting to, because you got a direct link to those different modes. You're not going to a separate server that we can see. Like, so I say maybe Doug has his own large server that he's running in the cloud somewhere or at his residence. I really don't know. We don't see that.
Let me go back to DVSwitch. You use DVSwitch, do you?
I have. In fact, I've got it out of my my system now that I've got my internet running well, and I've got my own All-Star node here. And so, at the moment, I don't have any more DV Link servers running, but I have for quite a while.
So you put the server software on a Pi,
mm-hmm.
and then I made a Pi Star for DStar, so I've got software running on that hotspot. So you create, but that's only for DStar. I can configure it for other things, but only one at a time. And so how is DVSwitch configured? Is it similar to Pi Star?
It is, except your Pi Star is actually using a radio.
Yes.
You know, your hotspot has got an antenna on it. It's got a
yes.
transceiver built in, very low power transceiver. So your radio is interfacing with your hotspot, which then connects to the various modes, the servers and reflectors of all the different modes.
So DV switch connects a phone to the system.
Exactly. And it just runs on a Raspberry Pi in your home. But if you want to take it on the road, you have to have internet access to that. So if it's set up as Wi-Fi, or maybe you use USB and have that tethered to your phone, then your phone provides the internet access.
Okay.
To connect to the various networks. Now you use that same phone to control it, interface with it. So it's got all the ways that it manages the software and does what you tell it to do. But with DroidStar or DudeStar, I really don't know what it's connecting to. I don't see any in-between servers. So it's either running as part of that application on the device, or it's connecting to a server somewhere. It's got to.
But
you can't do it without it.
Aside from that question, that we don't know how it's doing it, the functions that it provides to the user are the same, correct?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. The nice thing about the DroidStar is you don't have to take a hotspot with you. All you need is a phone with internet connection, and you can do all this connection without the hotspot.
So it's going to be interesting to see how, if we just think about innovations, for example, first a product or service comes out, then competitors come out, and sooner or later, something emerges as the dominant technology. For example, there are lots of antenna analyzers out there on the market, typically from $250 to $350. And these little VNAs that are available for as low as $50 on Amazon, what's that going to do to that market?
Right. Yeah. It's going to upset it.
It's going to upset it. Right.
Yeah.
Just as I am understanding from what I'm reading, the ICOM 7300 is upsetting the market. And it's a highly capable radio at a beginner's price point.
Yeah. And a lot of it is just the paradigm we use to look at these things. You know, as we've been watching digital develop from the days of the DV4 Mini, and that was, 5-6 years ago. I've been through it since the very beginning. I was wondering why we couldn't do that, because we have a local DMR repeater, and I'm thinking, why do I have to have a radio to communicate with the repeater? If I'm farther away, I can't do that. Isn't there a way I can use the internet? Seeing as it is an internet type protocol, why can't I just use the internet or my phone to communicate to our own local repeater from anywhere in the world? And so I've always been kind of thinking outside the box with that. And of course, eventually those things got adapted and adopted as how we now connect to repeaters from remote locations. So, you know, these guys that start this process out, they have one way of looking at, okay, so we have this Raspberry Pi that's the server, and now we need this application on a phone to connect to that, and everybody starts thinking along those lines. So all of a sudden someone like Doug comes along, I could just see this. Well, why do we have to do it that way? Why can't we put the server right on the phone or right on the device itself? Why do we have to have two separate things? And so he digs in and starts writing these things. Or Ty is the guy that's largely behind the system DMR network at TGIF. And he's always thinking outside the box. You know, he figures out, okay, this is how it works. What if I do this? What else does this open up to us? And now if you look at, in fact, this morning I was on the Prime TGIF.network server, and all the tools that he's coming up with to assist those of us with a talk group, with controls. We talked about controls, how we can mute people or ban people if they're creating troubles. We didn't really have that on the DMR platform, but now we do. If you go to prime.tgif.network, look at the active talk group list or the last heard list, and if you have your own talk group like I do, all of a sudden you got this new button that's by the left of your call sign. You click on that, and up comes this little control window, an admin window. I have total control over that talk group. I can mute people, ban people, do whatever I want to keep it, you know, in order. and get rid of bullies and troublemakers if we ever were to experience that. So you've got these brilliant programmers looking at things a little differently. Why do we have to do it this way? Just because it's always been done that way? What if we did this? And all of a sudden we got this new technology coming out that's easier to use and less equipment necessary. I just think it's marvelous.
I do too. It's just, except that it's for somebody getting back into the hobby after decades of not doing anything, it's sort of bewildering. It's just, there's so many options, and you keep introducing the technology of the hour.
Yeah. Well, I've been doing this for several years now, so believe me, when I got into this in the beginning, my head was swimming too, as everybody else's was. We're just, holy mackerel, this is neat, but how do I get involved in this? How do I manage a Linux server? What is that all about? And learning the command line coding and all that kind of stuff. It was like, man, I need help. Who can walk me through this? And thank God for people like the Zingmans and for IRS and then for IRR, who have been so patient with people and developing that platform, their dedication. Guys like Jesse, WH6AV, he was the one that really assisted me when I got into All-Star. Spent hours from Hawaii at weird hours of the day, first thing in the morning, you know, for me, and it's middle of the morning for him, and he would still be there to help me out or whatever, and helped out many people. And he's just one of many over at Ham Shack Hotline that volunteer their services to provide these unique and interesting communications platforms. And the ham community is, by and large, a wonderful community. People are always out there wanting to help you.
Yes, indeed.
Did you see your greetings from Mello here in the chat?
I just responded. Yes,
oh,
I did.
Good, good. See, more encourages out there. Good to hear Mello out there congratulating Jim on his extra license, which we don't have to worry about a new call. He's got the number one call, and he'll be sticking with that till the day he dies.
When I become a silent key. I'm not looking forward to that, by the way.
Yeah. I want to see your QSL card. Have you got it designed yet?
Oh, no, but I have a picture downloaded I'm going to use of a picture of the Earth from afar.
That's going to be a cool-looking card, and I want to place it prominently on my wall here once it comes out. So
I was thinking, you know, when I've sort of put the design on hold because now I'm learning about the electronic logs, you know, for DX, and you're essentially just transferring log information. No card actually moves from one place to the other, as I understand it.
Right. Well, I've got a card sitting right here. I need to get out to the mailbox here pretty quick. Got a card this last week from AC9HP, whom I worked on 30 meters. And I think it was FT8 that we made the contact. And obviously he wants to get confirmation and is not on LOTW apparently. But I got to get this out to him today. Our mail comes in about...
That's another thing. I've got to get signed up for LT... What was it? LTW?
LOTW, Logbook of the World.
Logbook of the World, yeah. That's a fairly, it's a complicated process to get signed up, but I guess it's, you know, doable.
We could do an episode on that. What if I want to get on LOTW?
Well, yeah, that's...
It's not easy. But the hard work's up front. Once you get on it, then it's easy. It makes logging so much easier than using some of the other different logging.
But then I've got to get logging software, and before I get the logging software, I've got to get my brand new machine back from repair. So everything, there's a chain of events here, you know, that has to happen in sort of a perfect sequence before you can get all this working.
Yep, and you're doing your homework for sure. Well, I got to get something in my ear. Yesterday afternoon, I came down with an earache that really annoyed me. most of the evening. My wife is the nurse, and she's taking care of me. I went to bed last night with olive oil on a cotton ball stuck in my ear, and some special essential oils that she had that put behind my ear and around my jaw to try and help. I actually put some stuff, drops in my ear. Man, did that bubble up. Kind of felt good for a while, but it was like little stabbings of something going on in my ear that just annoyed me. But it's pretty good this morning. I think I need to take a ibuprofen or an aspirin or something yet to keep it down. And she says that apparently that's quite a common thing, having earaches. Have you ever had one?
Oh, yes, many times. And if something was bubbling up, she might have put some hydrogen peroxide in your ear.
She did. Hopefully, yep. That killed whatever was in there. Obviously, earaches must come from what, some kind of infection or something?
Well, one thing that can, I am a earwax builder. I can produce lots of earwax. Yeah. And of course, hydrogen peroxide is a simple way to get rid of it. In fact, just warm water with about 25% hydrogen peroxide, irrigating the ear will pretty much do it. There's lots of ways to get rid of earwax, but hydrogen peroxide is one of them. And the preparations you buy in the drugstore to do this are simply one form or another of oil with hydrogen peroxide in it.
Yeah. I take it you don't use Q-tips.
No, I don't use Q-tips.
See, I've been a Q-tip user. I love to get in there and twist that thing around, and it feels so good.
That is the worst thing you can do.
That's what I've been told. Probably no wonder I got an earache.
Yes, you've probably got a bunch of earwax pressing on your eardrum.
Could be. I'm going to have to get a hearing aid like you pretty soon if I keep that up, huh?
Oh, man. I tell you, life begins again when you get hearing aids. You hear things you haven't heard for a very long time.
Yeah. Well, we're up over an hour again this morning. It's amazing how easy it is to find something to talk about here.
Yep.
And hopefully it's of benefit to the listeners. So thank you all for joining us this morning. And we'll say 73 and stay radioactive. Maybe we'll hear you on some of our platforms. You can find us on the prime.tgif network, which I'm monitoring now at 27622. That's my node number. You can find us on Fusion in the cafe in the treehouse. That's David, PA7LIM's platform. All you have to do is go to WorldLink Reflector and then go to the dashboard, worldlink.pa7lim.nl. You'll see yourself logged in the control pane. And from the dropdown, just pick the cafe. And then from then on, whenever you come into WorldLink, you will be in the cafe on Fusion. You can also find us on D-Star, provided by the Alabama Link folks, Doug Gooden and his team. In XRF, XLX, or DCS, 334 Juliet. You'll find us on Zello, in the cafe on Zello. Oh my goodness, there's just so many places. Right here in our Telegram channel, we have our voice chat. It's our cafe studios, and you can drop in anytime at 7 o'clock in the morning, Central Time, and join us as part of our audience. We might bring you in and have you tell your story, so... It's good to have you here this morning. Thanks, Jim, for the interesting discussion. Be prepared.
Indeed. Thanks so much. 73
from South Africa. Bye-bye.
73.
Have a good day.
Hi, this is Extra Class Amateur Radio Operator, K5DCC. I just upgraded to my Extra Class last year. You know how I did it? I used HamTest Online. Did you know that HamTest Online is the top-rated study program on eham.net? 97% of reviewers gave them 5 stars. They have more 5-star user reviews than all other study methods combined. And success is guaranteed. If you fail the amateur radio license exam, they will refund your subscription. It's a no-brainer. You pass the exam or get a full refund. Try it for yourself at hamtestonline.com. Hello, Cafeers. Denny J here in the beautiful Ozarks of Northwest Arkansas, out in the country, 25 miles from any large city. Out here in the country, we struggle to get good internet. Maybe you have the same problem. If you live in a rural area, you don't have many options. It's either satellite or DSL or cellular. And believe me, we've tried them all. Just recently, I was more than happy to pay the penalty to get out of our satellite service. Latency was horrible, and for amateur radio communications, the delays were up to 5 seconds, and you probably experienced what that's like. Our DSL service was also very unreliable. We rarely got the speeds that we were promised, and it kept dropping out. But now I think I found a service that we're going to love. It's called Visible.com. It's a company that's owned by Verizon and kind of a pared-back service, but works beautifully for my situation here out in the country on 15 acres. Visible.com offers only one plan. It's unlimited everything. Unlimited calls, text, and internet at slightly slower speeds than their top drawer plan at Verizon. But it does use the Verizon network. Go to Visible.com and use my referral code 3 November 37 November Tango. Also, to get your $40 a month bill reduced to $25, you need to be part of a party pay group. You can join me in our Digicom Cafe party. You will find the link to these things down in the show notes here, along with links to our Digicom Cafe community portal, which is a Facebook alternative. Also, our Telegram community, where we have text and voice chat, and also our live cafe cast here in the Digicom Cafe. So get your line at visible.com. And again, use my referral code and join our party to get that bill down to $25 a month.
Thank you for listening to this Radio on the Rocks Cafe cast. We invite you to join our mighty network's amateur radio community at members.digicomcafe.com.